This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll look at why bike fatalities are up in Wisconsin this year.
First, college students around the country are starting to return to campus to prepare for another school year. Last week, sexually suggestive banners hung at an Old Dominion University house where fraternity members lived reopened a national conversation about campus sexual assault culture. The signs read, quote, rowdy and fun, hope your baby girl is ready for a good time, freshman daughter drop off, and go ahead and drop off mom, too. There were similar signs hung in an off-campus house on move-in day for students at The Ohio State University as well this past weekend.
And we're taking your calls on this. What do you think could be done to help prevent sexual assault on college campuses? And what do you say about college sexual assault to your children, your grandchildren, as they head off for college? Have you yourself experienced sexual assault or violence on campus? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Carmen Hotvet joins us now. She's the Assistant Director for Violence Prevention at the End Violence on Campus Program for University Health Services at UW-Madison. Carmen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
We also have Michael Kimmel with us. He's Professor of Sociology and Gender Studies and Executive Director of the Center for the Study of Men and Masculinities at Stony Brook University. Michael, welcome back.
Nice to be with you. Thanks.
And Carmen, we're going to start with you. Are the sexually suggestive signs that we just mentioned, are they a typical portrayal of the attitudes toward sex on college campuses? Is that fair to say?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think the attitudes about sex on college campus are probably really varied. But I think one thing that we know is that when all male groups do something like hang signs that says drop off your daughters here, it's not just sexually suggestive, it's actually sexually violent suggestive. And we do see that there's sometimes an unwillingness among peer groups to intervene. We know that many men in that fraternity were probably very uncomfortable with that action. And then the few who chose to take that action and kind of send a message about entitlement. And we're not just talking about being welcoming to women in the house. This is a very clear message about what you can do with fraternity, with young women in a fraternity house, and speaks to, I think, the real work of prevention, which is enhancing the skills of those who might otherwise remain silent and who, in fact, are maybe the majority who have healthier attitudes about gender and sex.
And Michael, you wanted to say something too?
No, I couldn't agree more with what Carmen said. I think that what these propose very often is what's underlying them is this notion that sex is adversarial. It's men against women, and women will hold out as long as they can, and men will keep going and keep trying, and that if men win, women lose, and vice versa. And that, of course, it bears very little relationship to actual sexual behavior on the part of real grown-ups. But here's the thing that I think is really important to think about these banners. There's two things. One is that it implies or suggests a conspiratorial relationship between men. And that relationship is between the fathers who are dropping off their daughters and the guys. So I would add one thing to what Carmen said. What I would like to do is I would like to send this banner to the fathers of the frat boys. I want the fathers to see what their sons are actually saying to other fathers. Because you know what? A lot of these guys have sisters. And when the fathers see that they're basically being asked to volunteer their girls up as, you know, as fodder for this male, you know, sort of sexual entitlement machine, I think they're going to be a little bit unhappy.
It's interesting you mentioned the father connection. There are other stories like this out there in the news right now, one from Ohio State University, where a banner at a off-campus house read something like, dads, drop off your daughters, or dads will take it from here, I think is what it said. So if we
think this is just isolated, it's not. And I'm just looking at one, you know, they're all over the internet. There's another one that says, thank you, fathers, for your freshman daughters. You know, so all of these things. And I have to say, you know, there is a notion. There was a wonderful article in the Onion a couple of weeks ago that the headline was, Eminem is really upset because his daughter is dating a guy who grew up on Eminem's music. You know, when men think as fathers, they often feel somewhat protective. I think you know, for all of the political reasons why that might be problematic for us, I think that's important for to interrupt this conversation between young men and their and the dads.
Now, Carmen, is there something about fraternities here? Now, this was an off-campus house at Old Dominion where several fraternity members lived, but it was not a frat house in and of itself. But is there something about fraternities that you think it promotes this kind of thinking or this kind of behavior?
So we have some mixed evidence about whether or not membership in a fraternity increases the likelihood of perpetration. We have some mixed evidence about that. So some studies say absolutely a disproportionate amount of fraternity men commit sexual violence, and some studies counter that. But what I think we can know is that when all male groups convene, we have dominant norms of masculinity that reaffirm one another. Those norms reaffirm one another. And oftentimes on the backs of what it is to be a man, which is to be anything that is not even remotely feminine, vulnerable, is about physical strength, sexual prowess, the ability to get both money and sex as a tool to redefine that masculinity. And so is there a problem with fraternities? Well, the problem with fraternities is that they are a fodder for leadership and real opportunity for men to discover male friendships, male communities, healthy expressions of masculinities. And oftentimes what we hear about them, justly so, because many of them participate in behaviors like this, is skews towards hypermasculine, dangerous behaviors rather than at balancing it with the opportunity they have to redefine and reshape and hold each other accountable to healthier expressions of masculinity.
Veronica, I would just add one quick thing to what Carmen said, and I think, you know, that is a very balanced and nuanced answer, that there's some evidence that says yes and some evidence that says no. I think that where the evidence points is that there's nothing inherent about being in a Greek that leads to greater levels of sexual assault. But here are the structural features. Take away the Greek letters. You have all male residential, a residential house whose parties are completely free of university administrative scrutiny. Now, if you have a party in a dorm, you usually have an RA there. But in a party in a fraternity or an off-campus house, you very rarely do. And why? Because the national drinking age is 21. 9/10 of the people there are under 21, and they're all drunk. So if a university official is actually at present at the party, they would see illegal behavior, and they would have a positive obligation to report, which they don't want to do, so they stay away. So it's no grown-up scrutiny. It's an all-male environment in which there's a lot of alcohol. Now, you tell me the places on campus where you're likely to find that, and I will show you the places where sexual assault is higher, more likely. It has nothing to do with Greek letters. In fact, I think the Greek letters can often be used as a corrective against sexual assault if done properly. When I work with fraternities, for example, I go in and I say, bring me your charter. And they bring the charter in, and I'm sitting there saying, I don't see the part where it says, you know, get women so drunk that they fall, that they pass out and have sex with them. I don't see the part where you give girls, you know, drugs. I don't see those parts. What I see is that you consider yourself gentlemen, that you believe in honor, integrity, that you are good citizens, and that's the whole idea of this fraternity is to mold men of honor and gentlemen. I said, so you're betraying your own ideas of who you are. If you participate in this, I want to hold them accountable, not to my ideas of what it means to be a man, but to their own.
We're talking right now to UW-Madison violence prevention specialist Carmen Hotved and gender studies expert Michael Kimmel about sexual assault culture on college campuses. This conversation today was inspired by sexually suggestive signs displayed at a Virginia University off-campus house. And we're going to take a caller now. We have Mark joining us in Madison. Mark, hi.
Yeah, hi. I really don't know what's going on with the government as far as all this, the funding, but I think every male and female freshman, when they come into any university coast to coast, sign some type of an agreement with a monetary penalty of some type of sexual assault, and then have some type of self-defense for women, that's mandatory. And also, put more blue light kiosks with the panic button phones, have them more, you know, more square footage of those available outside in the middle of the night, and have a buddy system where there are no females out in the middle of the night, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, drunk or not, walking by themselves. I mean, there's really common sense, simple things that can be done without a lot of money. And there's also things that will cost so money, and we don't really know where it's going to come from. But
Mark, thank you for that call. And Mark saying some simple, cost-effective things he think would help, among them self-defense classes, another, women not walking alone. Michael, does that put the onus on women themselves to defend themselves and to walk? What do you think about gearing it that way?
I'm certainly fine with, you know, women being more, feeling more in, you know, empowered physically, you know, more safety, more lights on campus, all of those things. But, you know, I just offered you three variables that are structural variables: the all-male house, alcohol, and away from adult scrutiny. So what if I were to say, why don't we tinker with those structural variables? Why don't we say, why doesn't University of Wisconsin-Madison say, just as an experiment, that for the next 2 years, only sororities can serve alcohol at parties, fraternities can't. Now, currently at UW, only the fraternities serve alcohol at parties. And in fact, the fraternity members pay us $400 or $500 each, in addition to their dues, for liability insurance, because everybody, you know, because the house gets trashed every few months. So my feeling is this: why don't we tinker with one of the structural variables? From now on, only sororities can serve alcohol at parties. Now, what will that do? I think what that'll do is that will mean that, for the women, if they're so drunk that they can barely stand up, if they go upstairs, it's to their own room. Number two, you know, the women will be at the door deciding who gets in, rather than men at the door deciding which babe is hot enough and drinks well enough and dances enough and has sex enough the way they want them to get into their party. So it seems to me that this would reverse the power. Now, would this eliminate sexual assault? Certainly not. Would it result in other problems? Most likely. But my sense is it's worth a shot. It's worth a shot to tinker with these structural variables. I think university administrators ought to be at every party. But then they would be witnessing illegal behavior. So that is a real issue that I think we have to confront. And there are numerous university presidents around the country who are arguing in favor of reducing the drinking age to 18 because they think that would actually reduce sexual assault on campus.
We're talking right now
because it would mean more grown-up scrutiny.
Talking with gender studies expert Michael Kimmel about assault culture, sexual assault culture on college campuses. Also with us, Carmen Hotfett from UW-Madison. She's a violence prevention specialist. And we're talking about that culture after suggestive signs displayed at a Virginia University off-campus house. Reopen this conversation.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think would need to change to help prevent sexual violence at college campuses, to change the culture on campuses? And have you experienced this firsthand as an administrator, as a student on campus? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation and get to your calls in just a minute, but first, a check of the news with Kristen Durst.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our discussion about sexual violence on campus with Carmen Hotfett from UW-Madison and Michael Kimmel from Stony Brook University.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you are a student now, what do you see happening at your school? What do you say about sexual assault to your children? If you're a parent, when they head off to college, have you ever personally experienced sexual violence on a college campus? Call now at 800-642-1234, or you can share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go back to our callers now. We have Mary joining us next from Stoughton. Mary, hi.
Hi. I wanted to react to a recent caller who suggested that solving the problem might be putting more burden on women, like requiring them to take self-defense and requiring them to be buddied up, you know, when they're walking anywhere on campus. And I mean, to see how ridiculous that is to blame the victims of the assault, I would suggest instead that we put a curfew on all men. At 8 p.m. they need to be home. They can't go out.
All right, Mary, appreciate your call. Get a couple different perspectives there that we heard from the last caller saying women need to take self-defense, buddy up. Mary saying, well, let's put the burden on the men. So is this an active debate about where the blame lies and what's going on with that, Carmen, right now on campus?
Well, I don't know that it's an active debate. I think the jury is out and only doing work that targets individual women to protect themselves is no longer considered. It's still done, but it's no longer considered to be a good practice in addressing the societal epidemic of sexual violence on college campuses. And of course, we want women to feel empowered, and a self-defense class is a method to do that. That is great. We also don't want to send a message that sexual assault is inevitable. And to some extent, mandating self-defense courses helps to contribute to the idea that that it's inevitable, it's not preventable, and that you're responsible if you somehow didn't have the right move or see the right red flag. So things we are doing are increasing the capacity of people who aren't potential perpetrators or aren't potential victims to really look at their capacity to intervene in those dangerous situations. And I'll, I'd love to hear Michael's response to that.
Michael?
Carmen's absolutely right, of course. And I just want to respond to the caller because I think her idea of the curfew actually reveals the poverty of suggestions that women simply, you know, sort of navigate their way better and smarter and have more safety and have guys walk them home from the library and all of that. And I've always thought, you know, the analogy is like, If you're thinking that this is like a jungle and it's really dangerous, you would basically, you know, if the wild animals from the zoo got loose and were wandering around the streets of Madison, you wouldn't say, you know, oh, well, you know, too bad. You would say, stay in your house. We will round them up and then it will be safe to go back out. You know, it seems to me that while a curfew for men is equally implausible as individually saying to women, well, you should just arm yourself. Those are equally implausible solutions, but they reveal the social problem that we're asking women to solve the problem that is basically a problem of men.
Well, appreciate your call, Mary. And we're going to go next to Anne. Anne is joining us in Milwaukee. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I'm a professor at a college that does have a fraternity system, and I see no benefit whatsoever. My most disruptive students, my poorest students, male students are 9 out of 10 times fraternity members. I think it encourages bad behavior on a number of levels. And also I'm a mother of a young woman who's a senior in high school and looking at colleges, and she has doesn't want to go anywhere where there even is a fraternity system. She believes, you know, she's heard so many stories of rape, of terrible situations, and she wants nothing to do with it. So I think the whole system, I don't see one positive benefit to anybody of the system, and I think it should be eliminated.
Anne, thank you for the call. And we also had a comment on the Central Time Facebook page, a listener who wanted to know why there were fraternities allowed in the first place. So Michael and Carmen, the two of you were talking about maybe some positive benefits, but is there an argument to be made, Michael, that fraternities be abolished?
I'm sure there are arguments to be made. I think that, you know, to be discussing whether or not fraternities should exist on campus, I think Carmen would agree, will distract us from the question of all men's responsibility for ending sexual assault. This is not a fraternity issue. And if we consider it a fraternity issue or a fraternity issue alone, we run the risk, I believe, of letting everybody else off the hook. Well, I'm not in a fraternity, so it doesn't bother me. I'm just in a dorm. And so I think we need to make this an issue about masculinity, about male entitlement to women's bodies, to men using women as a kind of currency in their conversations with other men to say, you know, like guys who will pregame in their dorms or in their frats or on their sports teams or wherever, they'll pregame and they'll say, okay, I'm going to score with this, you know, with this one, and I'm keeping score. The other guys, you know, on the Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, you know, sort of discussion about the party, and they all talk about the different women that they've had. You know, to me, what's most troubling is that women, you know, you really want to see what gender inequality looks like. Women are the currency by which men keep score with each other about their place in a male hierarchy. Now, that may be more exaggerated in fraternities, but I think it's distracting to the conversation about sexual assault if what we talk about only is whether or not fraternities should exist.
So, Carmen, you had mentioned getting people involved as people who could intervene, bystander interventions. Alongside that conversation, is there one to be had about rethinking ideas of masculinity and steering that ship maybe in a different direction than it sometimes goes?
Absolutely. And so that's one of the easiest ways to intervene is to live out a healthy masculinity, so to be a bystander by intervening in a culture that says men with feelings aren't real men, as a form of intervention, cultural intervention in its own right. I also kind of wanted to return to the idea, I agree with Michael, if we get caught in the fraternity question, we are sidetracking, and we're also not acknowledging a couple other realities. Sexual assault is happening in places beyond fraternity houses and wild parties and bars. Mm-hmm. It is happening at the hands of folks people are dating. It's happening in LGBT relationships. It's happening when there's alcohol and when there's not alcohol. And so I think the distraction argument, I just appreciate there. I think one of the things parents can do as they prepare their students to come to campus is really look at what are the existing resources for survivors? What is the attitude and framework about the tolerance of sexual violence on campus? And what is the campus doing both programmatically and policy-wise to mitigate those contributing factors? Campuses, parents and students can go to the notalone.gov website to find out where the resources are and what campus policies are. UW-Madison, like many campuses, has a first-year ed program. It starts the conversation about naming the realities rather than the myths of these crimes. We've also put out a parent handbook this year at evocevoke.wisc.edu. You can access that. It is really a guide for parents to think about the conversations they can have to normalize consent and healthy gender relationships before students are coming to campus. We know that sexual assault survivors are more likely to disclose and get help from a parent who's had some sort of positive interaction around health and sexuality, sexual experiences, who's going to try to mitigate that shame and stigma survivors often feel and sometimes then don't get to participate in their educational opportunity.
And we have to leave it there. Carmen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And Michael, thanks to you as well.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you.
We were speaking with Carmen Hotvedt, Assistant Director for Violence Prevention for the program End Violence on Campus for University Health Services at UW-Madison. Also with us, Michael Kimmel, Professor of Sociology and Gender Studies and Executive Director of the Center for the Study of Men and Masculinities at Stony Brook University. They joined us to talk about the culture of sexual assault on college campuses.